No, answer a fool with the foolishness due, that he not be wise in his own eyes as true. For one sending words by a foolish man's hand cuts off his own feet, sure to misunderstand. That was our daily proverb, little children, from Proverbs chapter 26, verses 5 and 6, from 2004, the translation by yours truly. And yes, our article that we've been studying from 2015 is entitled Trojan War. We're in chapter 10 and we're on paragraph 11. And this is a fascinating thing. I say here, we would probably disagree with Whitelaw's corrections for the dates at the time of Jericho. And when I say that, I want to show you something about that, that Mr. Brian G. Wood published with regard to the radiocarbon. I was going to say hydrocarbon. It's not hydrocarbon. Radiocarbon. Radiocarbon is just the measurements of the radioactive carbon. That's what that is. And so it's called radiocarbon. Measurements. It's a measurement. It's a way to measure age. Now, I said yesterday, there's no way to measure age, right? It's virtually true when you get into long periods of time. But there are tree rings, right? Even that is not entirely certain because trees don't necessarily produce one ring every year. Sometimes they produce maybe two rings per year in some cases if there are seasonal variations that are extreme. Or a tree might produce no rings in some years. So it's debatable whether even trees can measure time using the tree ring count. But so that's why it's true. It still remains true that there's no way to measure age precisely, right? It's just not possible. I shouldn't say it's not possible. All things are possible with God, of course. Maybe it's possible, but we don't know how to do it. But before we begin to review these numbers by Mr. Wood, let me show you something else. Remember from chapter 8, I don't even have to show you, but we had a graph. I don't think I need to show you, but I better show just to make it more plain that in chapter 8 we saw this big graph. A beautiful graph, right? That showed the radiocarbon measurements made by Mr. Bronk Ramsey, and they do measurements in England where they bring their samples and they use the accelerator to do accelerator mass spectrometry, which is the method they use to do radiocarbon. Some other people do actually proportional counting on a sample where they actually just, it takes a long time to count how many decays occur when there's very little radioactive activity, right? Very little radioactivity in the sample, so that they would have to, you can use liquid scintillation counters, something that I used to be involved with as a summer student at Atomic Energy, where we had to keep, I think it was the germanium lithium detectors, we had to keep them cold, so we used I had to continually top up the liquid nitrogen, or somebody had to, and I was a summer student, so I got to do it, and you know, you had to wear gloves or whatever. It was liquid nitrogen, very cold, but you had to keep the germanium crystal cold so that the lithium wouldn't drift away. It's called lithium-drifted germanium. It's such a long time ago when I did this. But there was also a sodium iodide liquid scintillation counter, and it could count the total number of counts, but it had a peak that was, it produced a wider peak, so it couldn't measure the energy as accurately because there was a peak that was wider, whereas the germanium lithium could detect peaks that were much narrower, so you could find, you know, they were just higher, what's called higher resolution, energy resolution, to detect where the energy was of that particle, in addition to how many counts. You could just take the number of counts, which is the area under the curve, or you could find the energy by where the center of that peak was on the graph or on the scale, you know. So liquid scintillation counting is another way to measure these things, but they use accelerator mass spectrometry, but and that's what they do at Oxford, which is where Mr. Bronk Ramsey does his measurements. But you see, for all of Egypt, we got a straight line for all of time from 1000 BC all the way back approximately until 2600, which is Old Kingdom, basically, right? It's the beginning of Egypt in our chronology, right? The other thing is, have you ever noticed people often say that this is the time of Shishak, and they don't say in our chronology. In other words, they're not being honest. They're not telling you this is our way of doing it. They're trying to claim that they have the only way of doing it. You see all the literature, they say this is the chronology, or they say this is the date of Shishak, this is the date of so-and-so, this is the, you know, as if they state it like it's a fact. Well, if you see people doing that and they're not saying in our chronology, this is what we believe it is, then they're not being honest, and you know that they've been brainwashed somehow. And they're just assuming and presuming to know the truth without actually having investigated and found it, right? They don't actually know what it is. And you could see that whenever somebody says we're absolutely certain of something, you know they're wrong, plainly wrong. They're just not humble. But this graph, look at it. It looks straight enough, so it doesn't look like we have to change anything by hundreds of years, which is apparently what we would have to do if we were to, let's go back, chapter 10 again, if we were to make these corrections that Mr. Whitelaw showed here in his table 1 here, that we produced as table 10-1. But, okay, so, in other words, we don't have to agree with his corrections, except near the time of the flood, we can use his corrections. Because near the time of the flood, that was when there were changes in the sky, right? Big changes. When the floodwaters, well, when we believe the deluge, then there were floodwaters in the sky that came down. There were also floodwaters that came up. They came up for the springs of the watery deep as well came up. The Bible tells us it wasn't just the floodwaters from above, but there were a lot of floodwaters from the sky that came down. And at that time, therefore, there were big changes in the sky, so it's reasonable, is it not, to assume that there would have been changes in the amount of radioactive carbon in the sky right around that time of the flood. So right around 5,000 years, or 5231 in our chronology, before present, which is 1950, that's a calibrated 5231, a calibrated 5231 before present. That was the time of the deluge in our chronology, which is right around the time also that Mr. Whitelaw considers the flood as being, which is about 5,000 years before present in his case. So when we use this, okay, so he calibrated 5990 to 5,000, but he just used round numbers here, so... for his left-hand column, he used round numbers, rounded to 500-year accuracy, right? Not very accurate. I mean, he didn't try to tabulate every single decade, he just did every 500 years. But you see how there were much bigger changes before the flood than there are much bigger adjustments before the flood. You know, 19,000 converts to 6,500, whereas 1,115 converts to 1,000 in his chart. But in our case, we're going to ignore all of his changes except the ones near the flood, okay? In his table, because that's where things are changing. It would appear to be reasonable to believe, anyway. But now let's look at Jericho's results. So initially, a carbon-14 date of 1410, Mr. Bryant wrote, plus or minus 40 was done by the British Museum for Jericho, level 5, which is the one we believe was destroyed by Joshua. And so that was for charcoal, and it was, charcoal is not always the best thing to test because it could be from old wood. But 1410 plus or minus 40 would be in the range of 1452 if it were correct, but he said this was later found to be in error and corrected from 3080 before present to 3300 before present. Those are uncalibrated numbers. So after they're calibrated, it was either 1590 or 1527 plus or minus 110. Well, if we have 1527 plus or minus 110, that easily gets us down to 1450, right? If we go 1527 minus 110, that's 1417. That's below 1450. So we can see how our date of 1450 is reasonable based on those results. But these are actual samples, but from Jericho. But from Jericho also, additional tests were done on 6 grain samples from the destruction level. And that was interesting. Okay, the grain samples, that resulted, I mean, these were big bins or jars of grain that had been left right, you know, sitting in the city at the time when it was burned. So they seem like they would be recent, maybe. But, of course, they could have been there. Somebody could have stored grain for 100 years in the city, for all we know. So, you know, maybe it's not going to be the right. Maybe they'll be too old, you know. So, but they couldn't be too young, you know what I mean? You couldn't store grain before it was harvested, you know. Before it was harvested 100 years later, that's obviously not true, but it could have been harvested 100 years earlier. So, got to keep that in mind. But how people don't assume that usually. They assume, well, this grain was harvested the previous year or within a year or two or whatever. Additional tests were done, it says, okay, based on from those grain samples, and Mr. Wood goes on to say that the dates that resulted from those measurements were between 1640 and 1520, right? And the charcoal samples 1690 to 1610. Well, 1520 again is only 70 years away from 1452. That's not too far away. But also, the Italians recently, he said, this was in the year 2000 that these Italians reported this, according to him, according to Mr. Bryant, and he said a structure at the base of the tell yielded 1347 plus or minus 85 and also 1597 plus or minus 91. Again, since those are on both sides of 1450, our date of 1450 looks reasonable because it falls between those two. It's very difficult to get accurate results sometimes, not always, right? But sometimes. I want to show you some other things. The reason why we believe, we've tried to confirm our chronology, and the reason why we believe our chronology is so good is we did find confirmation. For example, is this the one I showed you yesterday or not? No, this is not the one I showed you yesterday. Here's the one I showed you. Yeah, that was the one. Maybe that was the one. Let's see. I don't know if I showed you either of these yesterday, but Mr. Finkelstein, Israel Finkelstein, in 2015, from the radiocarbon dating of Kerbet Kayafa, the 1010 to 936. Yeah, I showed you this yesterday. I think the transitional iron 1 to 2A, possibly, is what it was. And it the average of those two numbers was exactly 973. But the other one was from Mr. Kleiman, 2023, very recent measurements from Megiddo. And Megiddo is so well, what they call well stratified, which means it's well, the layers are not disturbed very much. And they've got all the time period of interest in all its glory, let's imagine, at that city of Megiddo from the time period of well before the time of Solomon, all the way down, if we're dating it accurately, all the way down to a much later time. So in the time of this destruction layer of Shishak, or the big transition from the end of iron, that is the end of iron one, that's the level Q7A, and it's A because it's the first layer you come to as you dig down. A is on top, so that's why it's the last layer of that sequence is A. If you dig deeper, you're going older, right? So on top is A, and that's the youngest, that's the most recent, that's the actual time of the destruction is that layer. Okay, so Q7A at Megiddo, and that's the end of iron one, and the average for these two numbers, the 94% range here, this is just this is what happens when you graph it against the calibration curve. You get these two probabilities. This has nothing to do with the 95% limit or anything like that, but it might be a 95% limit. I don't know what it is actually. You see, if you look at these numbers, yeah, in this case, the 1 sigma is exactly 68.2%. Normally, it's 95% between plus 2 sigma on one side and minus 2 sigma, or 2 standard deviations, on the other side. So within 2 standard deviations on either side, and the standard deviation is typically considered to be the expected error or uncertainty. So twice the uncertainty on either side gives, in this case, for the range 1030 to 915, it gives 94.5% of all the results should fall into that range. Statistically speaking, again, that's out of 95 total, whatever, 95 point something total. But 1030 to 915, the average of those two numbers, 1030 to 915, the average of those two numbers is 972.5. That was the one I showed you the other day. 972.5 is very close, exactly 930 in BCE time period, right? So we had two completely independent studies, one from different cities even. One from Megiddo, one from Kerbet Ka'afa, by different scholars, that both of which confirmed the end of Iron One as being in agreement with 973 as the same year in our chronology when Shishak came and invaded and destroyed a lot of different cities. And there are many other layers in other cities that have evidence of this destruction by Shishak, which I've been looking at great length and trying to find all the information about. So, yeah, and whenever I find something, I like to try and report it as well, and come up to speed on these things. Well, we're going to see a little bit more about how we use trees to do dating also in the next chapter, in the final two chapters. But in chapter 11, there's going to be some interesting things happening there, I think. In the meantime, we're going to be using the table of Mr. Whitelaw to do a more accurate approximation. For the arc, and we're going to use the arc wood. We're going to calculate, first of all, the age of the arc wood that was found by Mr. Ron Wyatt. He found this petrified wood right on the site of Noah's Ark in Turkey, in what's now known as Noah's Ark National Park. And that's covered in the article, The Ark of Urartu, where I went into all the details of what he found. And he was not a scientist. He was an anesthesiologist. So his presentation was always deficient in some way. It could never please the scientists, right? Because he's not impressive to anyone, including me, as far as his scientific knowledge. It's very deficient, right? And even somebody who knows a lot about science knows that we don't know much, you know. So, but for somebody who was not a scientist, he actually did a very, very good job for someone who wasn't a scientist. That was true. But he found this when they were actually inaugurating, I think it was on the inauguration of the national park, that was when he found it. There it was during the groundbreaking. There it is, yeah. During the groundbreaking ceremony, he was doing a ceremonial shovel in the ground. You know, they do the ceremonial, they cut the ribbon, or they ceremonially, at a dig, they ceremonially put the shovel in the ground. When he put the shovel in the ground, he hit something. He hit the piece of wood that he then dug up, and this is it. It's a petrified piece of wood it turned out to be laminated wood from thousands of years ago. It was actually laminated. And it was petrified, and they've you can see in this picture, they've done cuts from it. You know, they cut pieces out of it so they could make the radiocarbon measurements of it. And so that radiocarbon measurement was 5,700, he said, which we didn't know if it was calibrated, that number, or not, but usually they're always uncalibrated numbers. 5,700 should be uncalibrated, so we had to calibrate it to find out what date it was. See, it's not 5,231, right, which is what the date should be if it were calibrated. But when you calibrate the numbers, what would it calibrate to is the question, right? But we also knew, because it was at the time of the the problem here, yeah. So this is the interesting part. If you calibrate that number, I think it normally gets larger, right? Not smaller when you calibrate it. So because when you calibrate it, if you look at the calibrations we did for 2830, which was the time of Shishak, right? 2830. You know, if we just took 2830 and subtracted the 1950, that would give us our before present in terms of BCE years. It would only be 880. But this is, or it would be 880, I should say. It's more than, it's more, what did we say Shishak was? Oh, yeah, it's only 880 because we had 973, right. 973 is what the actual calibrated number is, somewhere around 2830 anyway. 2820, whatever, 2820 or 30 is where 973 is in the calibration curve. So, but just subtracting 1950, if you don't use the calibration curve, you get 880, which is not enough. It should be 980, it should be 973. So, I mean, you see 100 years difference, right? And it's too low. So, it would be too low if we just subtracted, right? So, we know that when we calibrate it, therefore, it goes up, okay? So we got 5,700. We wanted to have 5,230 if it was calibrated. But when we calibrate 5,700, it's going to go up, not down, right? Just like the 880 went up to 973, this 5,700 is going to go up in BCE years. And this is already... it's already too old, because 5,231 is where we want to be if it's the right time for our chronology. So you see that? So that's why around the time of the deluge, there was this correction that Mr. Whitelaw put for the time of the flood here, or the deluge as it's also called, right? This flood period was a time when the radiocarbon was changing, so you could have a 900-year and more than 900-year correction, which would bring it down 900 years from 5,700, right? And that brings it down to about 4,800 or so, or 4,700, I guess. It's almost a 1,000 years correction. And that 47 becomes calibrated and becomes then about 52. When you calibrate the 4,700, after arriving at 4,700, then you get 5,231 or something, maybe. Near that is what we're looking for. But we didn't contrive any of this. This is all... the only thing that we did Well, we just used Mr. Whitelaw's table. We didn't do anything to it, and then we did refinement of the, because the table is changing in a way that's not linear. We did a second order correction and so on in this chapter coming up. But let's, before we end our study, let's look at this other thing that we've been talking about in chapter 10, which I already I've been preparing to show you this. This graph, or the presentation, I was wanting to show you, this was what was presented by T.V. Ooman, and I didn't realize it was coming at the end of this chapter, but here it is. This is what I first found, which pointed me to the article by Mr. Whitelaw, was this chart by Mr. T.V. Ooman that he'd gotten from, apparently got from Robert Whitelaw, but it differs in some ways, in some respects, from what I got from Mr. Whitelaw's, or the graph that I showed you already, which is this one. And so, you know, we'd have to go back to the literature and look it up and see what Mr. Whitelaw presented and so on. But they're basically the same, though. But they differ in the magnitude of these numbers. For North American men and animals, they go up higher here in this example than for here, in this example, which is from T.V. Ooman, apparently. But there's still the same discontinuity at the time of the flood, which is very close to 52-31. Very, very similar, right? In that sense that there's this discontinuity, a sudden drop in the number of samples that date to that time. And it's interesting. There's more to learn from it, because there's always more to learn, but what you believe always determines how you interpret something, right? If we didn't believe the deluge, we'd come up with a completely different explanation. But if we believe the deluge, for which there is much evidence, a lot of evidence for the deluge, and the most important evidence, which is documentary evidence, there's a lot of evidence in not just the Bible, but in the flood legends around the world, right? That for the fact there was a deluge. But there's other evidence, like there were marine specimens on the tops of mountains. The fact that we tried to explain, yeah, why did the dinosaurs go extinct? Well, that could be even simply because they were alive in the ark, but after maybe they went extinct simply because even if there had not been tectonic or what do we call it, volcanic. Just the volcanic activity that was, I think that's just postulated by some people. The Bible doesn't mention that. So even if there weren't volcanic activity, just the floodwaters coming down, right? That could warm the oceans, because the floodwaters up in the sky could be warmer. I'm trying to think, would they be warmer or not? We don't really know, but is it possible that the floodwaters could have warmed the oceans? That's a question that we could have, just because they were warmer than the oceans to start with. Well, you can get, is rain warm when it falls? It seems to me it's not very cold. Maybe it is possible that just the rainwater and the springs of the watery deep together warmed up the oceans enough that it caused the ice age. Because of course, you don't have to warm water very much to increase evaporation. That's the point. Evaporation increases, and if evaporation increases with a warming, of any slight warming, that evaporation increase leads to more precipitation. And that increased precipitation causes the ice age in the cold areas, right? Because there's more precipitation. But why would it be, I'm trying to think, let's see. Oh, plus the fact, no, here's the other thing. The fact that the waters above in the sky were moderating the temperature on Earth prior to the deluge. After the deluge, then is when the extreme temperatures of winter and summer began, was after the deluge. So there are lots of things we don't understand about it. But that was yesterday. I was talking about how the dinosaurs could have died off suddenly. But they wouldn't have died off necessarily suddenly. But during that time period when the waters of the deluge were cooling off, and the temperate regions around the oceans no longer were temperate in the wintertime, and the ice age, basically, by the time the ice age passed, the dinosaurs passed. Well, there's so much to talk about on this subject. Also, there's all these the cave drawings by humans. At some point, there were drawings made. And many of these cave drawings have pictures of illustrations of dinosaurs on the wall. You know, they're clearly dinosaurs that are depicted on the walls in these cave drawings that show that humans were here with the dinosaurs. So the dinosaurs are not millions of years old. Why am I calling them dinosaurs? I don't know. They're dinosaurs. They're trying to be stored in the time period of millions of years ago by some people, but they're not belonging in millions of years ago. Apparently, they don't belong in that time period necessarily at all. Apparently, not at all, because humans and dinosaurs were here together, as also is proven by the fact they've got human footprints in the same piece of stone that has a dinosaur fossil, and there are lots, but they hide that at the museums because they have to go along with this myth about millions of years ago. But it's a myth, right? So all this means the Earth is actually not millions of years old, or not, it's only thousands of years old. In the Bible, true account of the Bible, that's what it says. It's not millions of years old. But now we differ in our chronology from these people who say that it's only 4,000 years old, because Adam is 5,500. In our chronology, the Earth is at least 7,500 years old, speaking about today, in our day. But look at the marine specimens 50 feet above sea level. You see that? They were measured back before the time of the flood, but because of the calibration, of course. Well, Mr. Whitelaw calibrated this before the flood, right? But they only go back to 7,000 years. So he calibrated it in such a way, and he used the same chronology that we do. Adam is about the time, about 7,500 years ago, right? The time of Adam, and that's what he calibrated his results to show. So that in his calibration, everything went to infinity. We're going to see that. His curve goes to infinity here. Okay, as you get up towards 7,000. Maybe it should be 7,500, but whatever. That's it for today's study. August 15th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 21:16 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Thank you for listening and watching once again. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty. This is Cassie saying bye for now.